This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild. Welcome to Progressive Radio. Today, it's a pleasure for me to have in the studio with me Frank Chin, who's been called the founder of Asian American Literature, Curtis Choi, director of a new documentary called What's Wrong with Frank Chin. Frank Chin, Curtis Choi, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you.
I guess I'll start with you. Curtis, why'd you decide to do this film?
I've been thinking about this because it keeps coming up. It started with drunkenness, but actually I'm getting ahead of myself.
Well, that's a nice place to start.
Frank was my teacher in 1970 at San Francisco State University. Well, then it was San Francisco State College. And I got a lot out of Frank, like how to drink coffee, how to work a stick shift. These are skills I didn't have.
Not on the curriculum either.
Yeah. And later, like 72 to 75, I did a film called DuPont Guy, The Skits of Grant Avenue, which was, I didn't know it at the time. Frank didn't know it. Most people didn't realize that Frank's fingerprints were all over that film from the stuff that I had learned from him. Asian American studies had just come into being in 1969. And we were all still groping for our identities. And Frank taught us that this whole Chinese hyphen American thing was a very schizoid thing, and we still didn't know who we were, and that we were not China Chinese, and we were not white Americans. So it forced us to rethink who we were. And those kind of ideas are in DuPont Guy, The Skits of Grant Avenue. I realized, years later that Frank's influence was all over that movie.
And Curtis Choi, is one reason you did the film because you wanted to bring Frank Chin and what he has done to a much wider audience?
Yes, with this last piece. But let me get back to being drunk.
Yes, please.
I was in Watsonville, California, with a couple of poets, Jeff Tagami and Shirley Anchetta. And we'd been drinking wine, as writers are wont to do. And so they suggested that you should do a documentary about Frank. And so we're all going, ah, ha, 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 ha. That's hilarious. But in my drunken state, I took it seriously, and I wrote some notes down on a piece of binder paper. And who should we interview? What would the questions be? What do we want to get out of this? What's still wrong with Asian America that we want to discuss? And so that story that idea hung out for a couple of years. And a few years later, I found myself getting divorced and in need of a therapy project. And so I found the piece of paper and said, now's the time to do the piece about Frank Chin.
How did that strike you, Frank?
Well, it's the first time I've heard this. Tell me more, Curtis. I'm fascinated. I'm interested in why. Considering how well I'm liked.
Well, that's just it. In the great scheme of things, people have a mistaken notion of what an ogre you are, and they hate you without having read anything you've written.
Why do they hate him?
It's his reputation based on his refuting Maxine Hong Kingston's changing of myths.
And Frank Chin, what's that about? What's the nature of your dispute with Maxine Hong Kingston?
Well, my dispute with Maxine Hong Kingston, I have no dispute with Maxine Hong Kingston. She's a racist, period. She takes the myth of Famuklon, which is like the myth of George Washington. She takes the myth of a historical figure, Famuklon, 550 AD. And Famuklon is a woman. She goes to 12 years of war and she encourages the lazy men to fight. She is a she's a leader. She becomes a general. And she unites the men and women of China to fight the northern invaders, the people from north of the wall. And this is done as a children's poem, children's ballad. She tattoos Fa Moklan. The tattoos are a mark of a criminal. She has her parents tattoo Fa Moklan. Tattoos it with the word revenge, and that's in case, according to Kingston, that's in case she is killed by the enemy, and the enemy strips her, and they will see the words revenge. None of this makes any sense at all, and there is a hero from 200 years later, also fighting the invaders from the north. In fact, the invaders from the north are constantly invading China for thousands of years. And he is tattooed by his mother. And she tattoos loyal to the loyal to the country, not loyal to the emperor. And that's the crime. And so she marks him with the crime, but it's a declaration that he is born from the country. He comes from the country. He's going to defend the country, not the emperor. And at that time, but Kingston, by turning Fa Moklan into a victim, from a hero into a victim, it's an outrage. It would be like turning George Washington into a misogynist out of the blue. I mean, it makes no sense. George Washington was the father of our country. But if she said he didn't include women's rights in the Constitution, what are you saying? What I'm saying, as the person who puts in his autobiography, this fake George Washington, I don't like America, and in the same way that Kingston does not like China. And she says, "Oh, that was my revenge on Chinese men." If it was revenge on Chinese men, what did they do in 550 A.D. to her, to Kingston? And it makes no sense. Later, she admits that she took the tattoos off of Mok Fei and put them on Fa Moklan. She does that in conversations with Maxine Hong Kingston, Skenazy, Skenazy, and Martin, University of Mississippi Press. And she confesses, "I faked it. Most of my readers," she says, "they don't know the Chinese myths, and I didn't tell them the truth." Wow, she admits it.
But what is so terrible about playing with myths, about changing the story?
Nothing.
It's actually just being passed off as the genuine myth.
But just, there's nothing wrong with it. Except that if you change the myth of George Washington, you're not an American. If you change the myths of Greece, you're anti-Greek.
Well,
if
you can be an American and criticize Washington, or even invent falsehoods about Washington.
For instance.
I mean, maybe you could say he was... Maybe you could say he was, planning to make himself king, which was the opposite of what he was doing. But you could do that.
But if you did that, would you be celebrated? Would you be criticized if you did that? I bet you would be.
Sure, you'd be criticized for straying from the actual historical record, but then you might say, well, he, in becoming president for two terms, was acting in a monarchical way, and that.
But you haven't changed the facts. Kingston changes the facts. Kingston takes Mark Fey's tattoos and puts them on Kingston, characterizing her parents as being these evil people. And it's that scene that is the most striking scene in the book. Mm-hmm. And it's an autobiography.
I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with Frank Chin and also Curtis Choi, director of a documentary called What's Wrong with Frank Chin? I wanted to go back a little bit to some of the scenes at the beginning of the film, Curtis, where you really introduce us to Frank Chin and really frame it as this man who was one of the first people to really go at the stereotypes that Asian Americans have been facing in this country since getting here. Why was that important for you to start with? And you intersperse with the actual stereotypes, which is a great part of the film.
Yeah, I as a baby boomer, I grew up in the 50s watching John Wayne movies on TV, and there's just still a lot of residual anti-Jap propaganda. And I sided with the Americans, of course. I'm a red-blooded American. And it wasn't until I became an adult that I realized, you know, that was kind of a form of self-hatred that had been foisted on me. I mean, I didn't really generate that. It was like all of that stuff is propaganda and conditioning. And I bought into it up to a point. And then here came Frank destroying all this stuff and making us rethink it.
And Frank, for you, it must have been as though you entered this field and there was this trash just everywhere you looked. And, you know, anywhere you reached, you could find an example of these kinds of stereotypes. How did you initially get to the idea that, look, I've got to hold this up for everyone to see?
Well, I knew that there were stereotypes out there. I mean, you know, Charlie Chan, Fu Manchu, all kinds of stereotypes. In 1969, 1970, I had been convinced by a recruiter, Jeff Chan, from San Francisco State, that San Francisco State was starting this Asian American Studies thing, and there were all these people that were ready, just hanging on my words. And I said, What? At that time, I just published a short story, and I didn't know what was going on. But he worked very hard to get me down there, and I got to San Francisco State. And all these kids, they didn't know anything. They didn't know the stereotypes. They didn't know that they were living the stereotypes. One kid I remember, he said, "Oh, you know, I have no problem. I was raised with white kids. I am essentially a white kid." And I said, "Oh, so with white kids, so what do you do on weekends?" And he hemmed and hawed, and I said, "Specifically, what do you do on weekends?" And he said, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Generally." Ah, that gave me a clue. Generally, what I do is, and I said, "Did you ever get in a fight? Ever get in a fight?" And he said, "Yes, I got in a fight." I said, "Describe the fight." He said, "Well, I was in lunch, and this kid was messing with my milk, and I went to get a piece of pie, and I got back, and he was still messing with my milk." And I said, and what happened? And that was it. I said, "That was it? That was a fight?" And I turned to the class and I said, "What have we learned about this guy?" And he said, "Oh, I don't know. He didn't say nothing." And I said, "Well, what we have learned about this guy, that he thinks he knows white people. He claims to have gotten in a fight, but nothing happens in the fight. It's not a fight. I said, "Did you say anything?" I said, "Well, I might have said." Well, I said, "Damn you!" And I said, "Oh," he said, "Damn you!" I say, "Damn you!" I say other words so many times a day that I forget. So you ask yourself, does he really know white people, or is he afraid of white people? And I think, well, that's that class. After class, I find him in the parking lot. He's bumping, he's walking around, bumping into cars, and he's crying. And I said, "Hey, man, what's going on?" And he says, "I don't know what I've been doing with my life." And I said, "Oh, what have I been doing? What is this class?" And so I took the class, and I said, "We're going to work with stereotypes. We're going to work with stereotypes. You're going to read the transcripts of the actors that I've talked to, and they will describe the stereotype that they're playing, and you will play them as they describe them."
How did they feel playing those stereotypes, the actors?
Curtis was one of them.
Yeah, I was one of them. it was liberating because we worked through it. We were no longer going to play up to the stereotype.
I took him down to it used to be the Hungry Eye nightclub in San Francisco, and it was now turned over to the gangs. The building was condemned, and so they gave the Hungry Eye to the gangs to use as a clubhouse, and they used it as a shooting gallery. But they had a beautiful showroom, and we rehearsed there. And so there were these gang kids, and there were these good kids from San Francisco State mingling with each other.
There must have been a sense of relief that was pretty widespread, both among the students who were acting the parts and the audience who was watching it.
They were apprehensive with the gang kids. As they got into the playing the stereotypes a different level of apprehension. We were singing "Ching Chong Chinaman Sitting on a Rail, Long Come a Choo Choo Train, Cut Off His Tail," and doing it as a rock song. And the Lum Gang walks in. The Lums were they had a reputation. The student singing the song said, "Talk to Frank." And Lum holding his fists down, just waiting for me to make my first move. And he said, "Stop singing that song." And I said, "Oh, why?" He says, "It makes fun of the Chinese people." This guy, Porky, was saying, "Kill him! Kill him!" And I knew if I moved my hands, if I lifted my hands, if I raised my voice, I was finished, and I would be, all these students were finished. And I said, "Oh, it makes fun of the Chinese people?" He says, "It makes fun of the Chinese." I said, "Have you heard of satire?" Nobody had heard of satire. But I kept them talking. And just by keeping them talking, the heat went out of the moment, and they couldn't build it back up.
And did they come to realize the power of the satire?
The Lums, no, I was beaten up later.
Really? I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking with the writer Frank Chin and with Curtis Choi, director of a new documentary called What's Wrong with Frank Chin. One of the aspects of the documentary that I like the most, and one of the things I admire about your work, Frank Chin, is the way that you uncovered many Asian American writers who had been lost. And could you explain how you managed to do that?
Well, I couldn't believe that I was the first, or that Jeff Chan and I, that we were the first. We weren't that brave. We weren't, that. And it was 1969. We'd been here at least 100 years. There had to be other writers. And I began looking for the other writers just by going into the used bookstores and looking under C's, L's, and W's, and finding books under Leong, under Long, under Chin, Chan, Chu, under Wong, under Wu, finding all these books. And some of them were good books. And these were published books. And why didn't we know about them? And then when we put together the first IE, in which we took excerpts from all going back to 1889, the first reactions to the manuscript were, well, you and your friends, it's a good book. I said, no, they're not my friends. These are dead writers. These books were, but the
IE, by the way, was an anthology, the first anthology of Asian American writers.
Right. Yeah. The publishers, publisher after publisher, wanted to give us instruction on how to get along in America. And I didn't want any instruction on how to get along in America. And it was Kay Boyle that got us finally came. She gave us a good review. It was Howard University Press that was the first to publish it. And it was their bestseller for several years. And I think, it got good reviews in the New Yorker. Kay Boyle, a fine woman, a fine writer.
Now, are these anthologies still being used in classrooms?
They've just gone out of print. But I hear that in Northeast Normal University in China, they've just discovered it and discovered the big IE too. And they're talking about bringing me over.
And, Curtis Choi, you said when we started talking that you did this film in part to discover what's still wrong with Asian Americans. What did you discover?
You want me to list them?
Sure.
I think that the progress we kind of made at the end of the anti-war movement, the civil rights era, the progress we made were largely undone by Reagan. And I think that we've suffered from this resurgence of greed and selfishness that sort of has retarded us as people, number one, but Asian Americans have sort of gone back to playing the stereotype and trying to lay low and make their money and all the other stuff that we railed against 30 years ago.
So for the audience, for the people of Madison, what's so wrong about the stereotype? I mean, we like the stereotype. I mean, we the white people like the stereotype. So what's wrong with it?
It's so convenient, isn't it? Way.
Convenient in what way?
It's easy to dismiss somebody. I mean, it's like the way casting directors work. They look for types so that an audience can instantly bag somebody rather than, see them as a human being that has, potential and blah, blah, blah. You put them in a bag, then you can discard them. And colored people are are like that in this country. I mean, we're still the minority, and so if we're in the way, it's just much easier to just, you know, put a label on it and throw it in the trash.
In the film, you run a snippet of someone saying that directors told them that Asian Americans can't be expressive, so keep your hands down when you're in the film to the actor. Was it hard, by the way, getting some of the footage or getting permission to use some of that footage?
No.
Just came, did they know how bad
they
were gonna
look? A lot of this stuff is actually in Frank's archives. It's from his original research. There are a lot of shots in the film of his voluminous archives because Frank doesn't make stuff up. He does the research, and it's all in these files.
Now, lingering stereotypes, or maybe the same stereotypes, or maybe just flat-out racism, can you talk about that? Because my experience recently at a basketball game, high school here in Madison, Wisconsin, is kind of alarming in that there is one Asian-American kid on the opposing team, and I was in the student section, and the racist comments were pretty startling to me, so much so that I finally told the guy to cut it out. I mean, he's, you know, hey, this isn't computer class, or hey, ramen noodles, that was another one. And, you know, 2005, maybe I'm naive, but it was a bit of a shock to me. How prevalent is this kind of crude racism?
I think it's coming back.
Dude.
Yeah. I mean, we made a certain amount of progress, and now, I mean, who does this country attack? You know, people who are like brown, yellow. You know, it's the, who did we drop the atomic bomb on? I mean, it's I don't know really where to go with that.
Frank Chin, what's your assessment of that?
I think the I think Kingston and the women's movement have had a deleterious effect on the stereotype. You notice no Chinese or no Asian men dare speak at all. And they dare not speak at all against women. Because they're going to lose their girlfriends if they do, and the women, they will speak to high heaven about the faults of Chinese men, as laid out by Kingston or Amy Tan or David Henry Hwang. They they're just stereotypes. I mean, they're too numerous to name. But notice there was not one Asian American magazine out there. There was not one, and there have been years since homosexuality, since women's movement. And the women's movement have magazines. The homosexuals have all kinds of magazines. But the Asian Americans, no magazines.
Well, unfortunately, on that sobering note, we're going to have to leave it. Frank Chin, Curtis Choi, thanks for being my guest today on Progressive Radio.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.